Hello, everyone, and welcome to Peach State Prospects, your go-to podcast for all things Atlanta Braves minor leagues. I am your host, Gaurav, and we are back again today to break down day two of the MLB draft. Today, the Braves made seven selections from rounds 3 through 10, and we're here to break them down for you. Joining me today are Garrett Spain and friend of the pod, and thank you so much for coming again, MLB draft expert Matt Powers. So sit back and join us as we break down the potential draft picks and explore how they fit in the Braves' long-term plans. Let's go ahead and get things started with the first pick today. Third round pick, Luke Sinard, right-hand pitcher out of the University of Indiana. Luke joins Garrett Baumann as massive human beings in the Atlanta Braves organization, standing at 6'8", 250. Whew, Luke's got a four pitch mix with a low to mid 90s fastball, curveball, changeup, and a solid cutter. Garrett, I want to go to you first. What have you seen from Luke and what do you like about him?
Yeah, so the big thing with Luke is that he had Tommy John surgery at the end of last season. It does sound like he's pitching at this point, which, you know, a year out now at this point, obviously you should be pitching, but you know, I don't know if he would pitch with the Braves at the second half of this year. It's probably going to be next year if I had to guess for him. But, you know, the Braves really took a risk on a guy that was kind of could have been a day one pick had he not gotten hurt. You know, he was trending pretty well, was doing well for Indiana. And, you know, you can't teach size, right? So he gives the hitters a unique look on his pitches just because of the angle it's coming in at. And the Braves have liked taking those risks on those injured guys. And you kind of look at it, they've had Tommy John issues in the system, but you can't really control that. But you kind of look system wide and there's not, other than the Tommy John surgeries, they don't really have a ton of injuries with their pitchers. And I think that they trust their staff to really manage injuries pretty well, or at least it kind of seems like they do because of the amount of guys that they've taken over the years with those injuries.
Standing at 6'8", as a massive human being out on 250 pounds, it's really hard with whenever you have a pitcher with that kind of size, you always have to question mechanics. Matt, two-part question for you: how well does Luke continue to repeat those mechanics, and what are your overall thoughts on the pick?
So he repeats the mechanics fairly well. I mean, if you look at his stats last year, just for an example, he struck out 114 against just 25 walks in those 86 innings. Not that the stat line really tells you much, but I think that really gives you an idea that he doesn't have a hard time throwing strikes with his mechanics, which is unusual for a guy his size, because once a pitcher is above 6'6", you really start to see more of a struggle with mechanics, just keeping those long limbs in sync with each other for the delivery. But he doesn't really have that problem, and he could be maybe even an above average command guy going forward. Love the pick. I think that if he had not been hurt, you're talking about a guy who goes on the first day of the draft. Is he a first rounder? I mean, it's hard to really say, because last year was really his only college season where he did well, because he struggled significantly as a true freshman at Western Kentucky back in 2022. But he had a shorter amount of time to really prove himself and try to improve. So it's not out of the question that he could have gone in the first round, but he would have gone in the second round if he had been healthy, I would believe. And getting a guy like that with his stuff and strike throwing ability, and he's a fairly low mileage arm. I mean, he's a college arm, but he's only got 112.2 innings in his career in college. So it's a low mileage arm. He already had his Tommy John, and he's really got the mix that the Braves might be able to do something with.
Yeah, I'm not so sure low mileage matters too much once a guy's already had the Tommy John surgery.
Yeah, you do bring up a good point, Garrett. The risk is already there. The next question becomes, can he, you know, if it happens again, can you survive a second one? You know, it opens up Pandora's box, and it is a tough subject to talk about, but just to even, you know, try and quantify that injury, you say Luke is a first day pick. First round pick in that slot level, you know, for the Braves at 24 was somewhere around $3.5 million. In round two, that's $1.4 million. He finds himself on day two, round three, that pick value goes all the way down to $737,000. So we're talking even between round two and three, that's half the amount of slot value or potential, you know, signing bonus that Luke would be able to get. So it is a very, very expensive injury. Heading on to the next pick, the fourth round pick, Eric Hernandez, left-hand pitcher out of University of Miami. He is a bit undersized coming in at 5'11", but again, much like Luke, much like the Braves' first and second round picks, he's got a four-pitch mix with a fastball, curveball, slider, and changeup. Garrett, I want to go to you first. What have you seen on Eric, and what do you feel about this pick?
This is a bit of an interesting pick. I know we had talked a little bit, Matt isn't too high on the guy. I think that it's not, for me, it kind of shows that the Braves are, you know, we're a little bit kind of saving money with this pick, and he's probably end up coming under slot, you know, I would assume. But he does fit a profile that the Braves tend to go for, and that we kind of notice where they're getting these guys with above average vertical approach angle. You know, and Hernandez is 5'10", so he's coming from a low release, and he can command the fastball well. And those traits, that fastball specifically, flat approach angle, vertical approach, induced vertical break, fastball commander, things that the Braves really target with players. Hernandez has that. They feel confident in their development staff and being able to teach especially hard sliders to these guys. You know, obviously the risk here is reliever risk, just with not really having even a second good pitch. You really have to wonder if they can develop enough for him to be a starter. With his size, there's reliever risk there. But I do think that that's an interesting arm just because of the traits that we see that are very Brazy traits with him.
Matt, any additional thoughts from you?
No, I mean, that's pretty much it. The reason I'm not high on him is what Garrett said. I mean, he's really only at this point got the one pitch that is really a quality pitch. But the Braves saw something they liked, obviously, to take him in the fourth round, because if you are just looking at what he is presently, that's not really a fourth round talent. But the Braves liked something, and apparently the Reds did too, as they did draft him last year. So it's not just the Braves that liked this kid.
Yeah, it is interesting how he was selected previously in the draft, but the two of you both, and I agree, he's got four pitches, really only one that is, you know, significant. Garrett, quick two thoughts or a quick sentence from you. Do you feel with his secondaries, any of them have the opportunity to improve and become, you know, even at least average?
I think the curveball is probably the best of them, but I think ultimately the Braves will probably, I would guess, completely scrap them and just use them as a developmental project and have them throw a hard slider and kind of see where that takes them. That tends to be their path with guys, at least from what I've seen.
Awesome. Thank you for that, Garrett. Now we head on to the fifth round, and this is when the Braves take their, so far, their lone position player. The three of us are absolutely thrilled with this pick. The Braves, again, fifth round pick, they go with the big power catcher, Nick Montgomery from Cypress Hill High School. Nick is 6'4", 210, massive man. Again, we don't know if he's going to be able to stick it at catcher. He might eventually move to, you know, first base, but he's got that huge bat with massive power potential. Garrett, what do you have for us on Nick Montgomery?
Yeah, it's all about that power for him. His swing creates a lot of leverage. He really drops his hips into contact. Now, with that, he has, you know, he's 6'4", long levers, a long swing. That's really going to be the concern for him, is whether he hits. You know, if he hits, it really doesn't matter if he catches. Like, his power is so good that if he hits at an average level, he's easily a major league player. And the Braves tend to like, with catchers, a lot of what we've seen them target, at least guys that they think they can develop, are guys with power, but defensive questions, maybe hit tool questions, guys like Tyler Tolvey, even Drake Baldwin had somewhat of a hit tool question coming out of college, but was more of a, raw power type of guy. Montgomery really fits that bill perfectly, and the Braves are confident in their ability to develop catchers. Now, it's harder when the catcher is 6'4". That's a very big frame to hide behind the plate. So it is more difficult to develop those guys, but he already has the arm strength. He has the power, and what we've seen from the Braves is they've done a good job with that defensive development. Baldwin, Adam Zebrowski, who's a bigger guy now, he's more of a fringe catcher, really isn't a guy that you feel confident with back there. But both of those guys and Tyler Tulvey have all taken defensive steps at the professional level under the Braves' tutelage, and I really think that they feel confident they can do the same with Montgomery.
Yeah, if the hit tool develops, we're talking about a really, really valuable player in any organization. If he stays at catcher and that hit tool improves with his power, that is a, I would say, that's a perennial all-star catcher there. Matt, what else do you have for us?
So, I mean, obviously you're drafting him for his power, but if he isn't able to stick at catcher, I mean, if he is able to stick at catcher, you're talking about potentially one of the best offensive catchers in baseball if he's able to develop the hit tool. I do think it'll take some slight adjustments to the swing to get that hit tool to work, but I could definitely see the potential for that to get the power to play. But if he's not able to stick behind the plate defensively, first base isn't necessarily a sure thing. He definitely runs well enough, despite being a 6'4 catcher, that he could possibly handle left field defensively. So you're drafting the bat, you're hoping he could catch, but if he can't, he could play other positions and has more than enough bat to do that, should he be able to make enough contact to get that power to play.
6'4", let's scale it back just a little bit. He's 6'4", 210, catcher slash potential left fielder. I remember another Atlanta Braves 6'4" catcher who also played left field. Unfortunately for Evan Gattis, he was not really good in left field whatsoever. So it's encouraging to hear that he's got that athleticism to potentially be able to stick there. It'll be really interesting to see how his hit tool develops. If that's sitting at a 50 with his power, that's a very intriguing catching prospect, and most likely I would, at least a fringe top 100 player. But moving on to the sixth round, again, the Braves go prep, and it's another intriguing pick with right-handed pitcher Ethan Bagwell. Ethan's got a big arm potential. Very, very early on, he was hitting 97 on the radar gun, but he works more low to mid 90s. He's got two more pitches and a slider and a changeup. Garrett, what have you seen from Ethan?
Bagwell, one of the things that you really like with him is the arm speed. He has above average to plus arm speed. So you can kind of see him not only sitting at those, once he adds some strength, maybe sitting at those higher velocities. He's going to need some mechanical work. He's not very downhill at this point, and there's a lot of moving parts to his delivery. And so the Braves are going to have to make some adjustments to really maximize his command and maximize his pitch mix. But I think that they're going to get him working more downhill, at least that's what we've seen with guys like what they did with AJ Smith-Shawver when they got him in there. And then, you look at the slider for me is very good. That's his best pitch. That's the pitch I really like from him. I think they'll probably, what we've seen them do with similar players in the past is throw the slider a little bit harder, throw a slower curveball, and they really like that slower curveball against left-handed batters for some of these guys, both with and in lieu of a changeup. So you can kind of see them diversifying his pitch mix and kind of seeing what works for him. But I think the slider shape where it is right now, it's inconsistent, but when it flashes, you can see it flashing above average to plus. Not a lot of guys at this level have that level of feel for spin. You can kind of work with at this range in the draft, you can work with, okay, I have to do work with this mechanics. I may have to adjust this fastball shape slightly, but you have the arm talent there, you have the feel for spin. Those are two of the biggest things that you're going to look for in amateur players, along with athleticism, and he has those traits. So that's very important for the guy, and that's one of the reasons I think we're all high on.
He's definitely work in progress, but Garrett, just quickly, you think that's a good pick at this in the sixth round?
Oh, absolutely. I think that he's one that, you know, from the video we've seen, obviously we haven't seen him consistently, but from the video we've seen, he looks good.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Ethan Bagwell?
I mean, I think he's at this point a pure lottery ticket type of pick. He's got a lot of different things that are valuable to work with, but he's going to need a lot of work, which is expected for a high school cold weather state arm. But the fastball can be up to 97. The slider has shown real potential to be a potential strikeout pitch. He's shown flashes of his command. He's obviously going to need to work on his mechanics a little bit, improve the consistency of the slider, the ability to stay at that higher range of velocity. But he's got a big frame, 6'4", 230. He has a lot of physicality already. He doesn't have a ton of projection left, and he's a guy that can just potentially go out there and attack hitters with high velocity stuff. He's a lottery ticket, but at this point of the draft, it's a worthwhile pick.
Through the first six rounds, the Braves have drafted a Cam Anity and a Bagwell. Now, of course, Cam is the nephew of the late Ken Caminiti. I don't believe there's any relation to Jeff for Ethan, but it's still, you know, just a funny little aside. Now we head to the seventh round, and the Braves again go with a right-handed pitcher. This time it's Brett Thiers out of the University of Nebraska, same school they had previously picked Spencer Schwellenbach from. Brett isn't quite in that same category as Spencer. He's got a low 90s fastball with a slider and a changeup. He's a fifth-year senior. It's pretty understandable that he is going to be an underslot type of guy where the Braves can save some money. Matt, what do you have for us on Brett?
So he's obviously older. He's already 24 years old. Started his career at Western Illinois, transferred into Nebraska. Had not been especially good in his college career before this year. Career best ERA before this year was 5.29. And then this year, he just really, really came on. 2.16 ERA, 0.875 whip, 101 strikeouts to 19 walks. He's not got great stuff. That's why he's a senior signed 24-year-old, despite those numbers. But he is a pitchability guy. And he had great results in one of the better leagues. I mean, it's not quite ACC, SEC, but it's still a power conference. So at this point, when you're looking at senior signs, a guy with those kind of results is and pitchability is something that you want to take a chance on to load up in your system, and maybe he's able to hit.
For those that aren't that don't understand the term, Matt, can you explain to them what you mean when you say pitchability?
Yeah, it's just the feel for pitching, whether it changing speeds or changing shapes, using different parts of the strike zone. It's just knowing how to pitch and doing it in different ways to really keep hitters off balance. I mean, you're not gonna throw stuff by guys and make them swing and miss at stuff. It's more of the pitch to con it. Greg Maddux is a pitchability guy, for example. I mean, obviously, the high end of pitchability, but if you're comparing a Greg Maddux to a John Smoltz, one of those guys is a pitchability guy, one of those guys is a pure stuff guy. Obviously, Smoltz had pitchability too, but that's kind of what pitchability means.
I think that example kind of is pretty perfect. Thank you for that, Matt. Now we head to the eighth round where the Braves select right-handed pitcher Logan Samuels out of the D2 ranks at the University of Montevideo. I gotta be honest, I actually do not know much about Logan. He had a good K rate sitting at 10.4 strikeouts per nine. He limited walks all the way down to 2.26 per nine. However, he gave up a ton of hits. And when you have a 10.4 K per nine and a 2.26 walk per nine, you have to imagine you'd have a pretty solid whip, but that isn't quite the true for Logan. He gives up a ton of hits, and that's resulted in a 1.39 whip. He wasn't on my draft board. I don't believe he was on Garrett's. Matt, I don't think he was even on yours. He's a senior sign. Again, should be able to save the Braves some money. What do you know about Logan, Matt?
So he was not on my radar whatsoever. That school, the University of Montevallo, was not on my radar whatsoever. They've produced one big leaguer ever. I mean, he was, I believe he was an all-star back in the day, Rusty Greer, but and that's mid to early 90s. So that tells you how long it's been since that school has produced anyone. But I think what the Braves see in him is, despite the numbers that were not good, to say the least, he is seen as a projectable player despite being a senior college arm. He is listed as 6'4", 170. I'm not sure how accurate that weight is at this point because you're talking about possibly old information from a smaller level school, but he definitely still has projection left. And I think that's kind of what the Braves saw in him to go after him.
What I particularly love about baseball is their ability to find. If you have an arm that is attractive to a single individual, an MLB team will find it. And they, the Braves being able to find someone, Matt, that's a great nugget with one other MLB player ever in the school's history. Like being able to find that is pretty incredible. Whether that's sitting on YouTube watching highlight videos until you find someone that's intriguing you, like I don't know how they do it, but very interesting find by the Brave scouting team. Now we head to the ninth round, and that's where the Braves take another interesting pick, and that's with right-handed pitcher Owen Hackman out of Loyola University. Owen's got a three-pitch mix with a fastball that sits in the low 90s. Really good. Again, 10 strikeout per nine pitcher. This one for Owen, he walks 3.3. Again, great additional stats regarding him. He's another pitchability over stuff type of selection, like you talked about, Matt. But Garrett, I want to go to you first. What can you tell us about Owen Hackman?
So Hackman's a guy that's interesting to me here. 6'1", a little bit of a low release angle, gets above average induced vertical break. Again, we're looking at traits that the Braves like. With Hackman, I kind of want to see how we see with some guys, like I was talking about with Bagwell, they'll add pitches, mix pitches in. Hackman's a guy where I could kind of see them simplifying him because he seems to throw two different fastball shapes. His slider, I actually had trouble figuring out whether it was a slider or a curveball because the shape varies so much. But if you get him with that fastball shape and the slider shape, he kind of can throw that hard vertical slider that the Braves like. And that's very effective, especially down and arm side. It's similar to kind of what Spencer Strider throws in terms of, the velocity gap, the shape. That's what the Braves tend to look for, is that specific type of slider. Hackman has shown that shape. Now he can get more sweepy with it. He can get more vertical with it. It's a very inconsistent shape, but it could project to an above average pitch along with the shape of his fastball. That gives him a two pitch mix, and you're getting a guy in the ninth round, presumably cheap. Having two pitches that could be major league quality pitches, that's a great find there. There's a lot of work here to be done. Do they add a changeup? Do they keep him as a starter? Those are kind of the questions that you're looking at. But I do like, especially the slider, the pure, when he throws it right, I really like the slider. And I like the metrics on the fastball. And I can see where their models looked at him and went, hey, that's something that could really work for us.
A senior sign with two MLB quality pitches. That's really incredible value. Matt, what else do you have for us on Owen?
Pretty much covers most of what I want to talk about. He also had a solid year this year. Did actually pitch in the Cape Cod League 2 summers ago. Not for very long. He made five appearances in relief, just 7.2 innings. Did strike out 13 guys in those 7.2 innings 2 years ago in the Cape, obviously against top competition. But he definitely did show a little bit in a very tiny sample size there.
Thanks for that, Matt. And rounding out day two was the Braves' 10th round pick, Jacob Kroger out of Maryville University. Jacob was a fifth-year senior. Again, he's going to be one of those low under-slot signings with someone of his stature. We're talking about $5,000 to $10,000 range. Jacob did put up big numbers. He had a 3.18 ERA, struck out 11.6 per nine, and had a pretty solid 3.67 walk per nine rate. Overall, I wanted to get your thoughts on the day two picks. Garrett, let's go to you first. How did you think of the Braves strategy for day two, and what did you think of their picks?
Looking at the overall quality of the draft, they're limited this year. They didn't have comp picks, which they have had comp picks in the last couple of years. I feel like they got a lot of upside in this draft, and the Braves are at a state with their system where, or maybe they could use a shortstop, right? But other than that, they have depth everywhere. So they can take these risks and feel like, okay, if these guys don't work out and we lose most of this draft, the organization is still going to be fine long term. And so I definitely kind of like that they went upside play and kind of how the board shaped up this year. Overall, they've done pretty much exactly what you wanted to see. I think me and Matt talked about it and we were like, me and Matt talked and we're like, we think that they'll go probably two decent college guys, get a prep arm. They instead went one college guy and Senard and two prep guys. So still about what we expected in terms of, the higher value players. And we see another interesting trend with them. This is the fourth straight year they had AJ Smith-Shawver, Adam Meyer, Garrett Bowman, and Isaiah Drake last year, where instead of getting these high bonus overslot guys kind of in the third round, they're floating them down fifth, sixth, seventh round and kind of getting their preferred college guys early. It's an interesting strategy. I'm kind of curious. I would love to know kind of why they're doing it. My kind of assumption is they get the first shot at the college guys they want, kind of the maybe somewhat cheaper signs that they really, really like before another team can snipe them. And then, they're already floating the high school guys and they can get them later. That's kind of what I'm wondering if that's what's happening.
Excellent call out there, Garrett. Matt, your thoughts on day two?
Obviously, I like the draft. One of the better day two drafts, just talking day two, much better than last year at the same time last year. Not quite as good as at the same time I thought as that excellent day two in 2022. Is that now 2 years ago? I really loved that day too, but I mean, it was a very strong day, especially when you factor in that they just didn't have a ton of money to work with. It is, and obviously the one thing that I've seen people commenting on the most is just how pitcher heavy it is. And I did want to touch on that. I think that the hitters this year, especially after the first round or two, are quite flawed. And a lot of these pitchers are also needing some work. So at this point of the draft, once you get into rounds three on, you're really drafting for guys that you think you can develop, whether they have a tool or whether you believe in your player development system for doing a certain thing. And I think everybody would agree that the strength of the Braves player development is with pitching as opposed to hitting. So drafting pitchers that might have some flaws or might need some work over drafting hitters, because all of these hitters that are out there today, for the most part, other than a couple that might cost quite a bit more money than what the Braves were willing to spend, they have questionable hit tools, not enough power, real defensive home questions, some character issues, some lack of production in college, some injuries. So I think they're just going with what they know that they can actually hit on at this point when it's flawed player A versus flawed player B. And that's just a safer way to actually maximize what you have.
Day two for 2022, just for added information, the Braves were able to grab Drake Baldwin, David McCabe, Nacho Alvarez, Seth Keller, Adam Mayer, Jason Franks, Corey Acton, and Andrew Keck. That's five of the five people that are now in the top 30, with a couple of them near the top. Like, that's a fantastic, great call out there, Matt. That was a fantastic day two for the Braves back in 2022. Well, that about does it for today's episode of Peach State Prospects. We hope you enjoyed our dive into day two of the MLB draft. If you liked what you heard, be sure to subscribe, rate, and review us on your favorite podcast platform. Follow us on social media for more and more updates, not only on the draft itself, but the state of the Braves farm system. Until next time, which will most likely be tomorrow. However, we'll see how the Braves have spent that money, see exactly what type of prospects the Braves are drafting. If we don't do one tomorrow, we'll make sure to come together again on Thursday to talk about the overall thought, our overall thoughts on the entire Braves draft. Until next time, everybody, keep cheering on the Braves and stay tuned for more Peach State prospects.